Screen Directors Playhouse stars Tallulah Bankhead, Steve Cochran, production Humoresque, director Jean Negulesco. This is the Screen Directors Playhouse, one of the weekly features on NBC's All-Star Festival of Comedy, Music, Mystery, and Drama. Brought to you by the makers of Anacin for fast relief from the pain of headache, neuritis, and neuralgia, by RCA Victor, world leader in radio, first in recorded music, first in television, and by Chesterfield, the only cigarette that gives you mildness, plus no unpleasant aftertaste. The cigarette that brings you Bing Crosby and Bob Hope. Tonight, the Screen Directors Playhouse is pleased to present the great motion picture hit, Humoresque. And here are our stars, Tallulah Bankhead and Steve Cochran.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen.
Hello, darlings. Years ago, Fanny Hurst wrote Humoresque, and overnight it was a sensation and a bestseller. Then this tempestuous and dramatic story was translated into one of the great silent motion pictures, Unforgettable. It again was demanded by the public, and Joan Crawford and John Garfield obliged. Now, Steve Cochran and I are privileged to offer the radio version. But before we begin, here is Jimmy Wallington.
The next time you suffer from pains of headache, neuritis, or neuralgia, take Anacin. You'll bless the day you heard of this incredibly fast way to relieve these pains. Now, the reason Anacin is so wonderfully fast-acting and effective is this. Anacin is like a doctor's prescription. That is, Anacin contains not just one, but a combination of medically proven active ingredients in easy-to-take tablet form. Thousands of people have received envelopes containing Anacin tablets from their own dentist or physician, and in this way discovered the incredibly fast relief Anacin brings from pains of headache, neuritis, or neuralgia. So the next time a headache strikes, take Anacin for this wonderfully fast relief. Anacin, A-N-A-C-I-N. Anacin comes in handy boxes of 12 and 30, economical family-sized bottles of 50 and 100. Get Anacin at any drug counter. Now, the first act of Humoresque, starring Tallulah Bankhead as Helen and Steve Cochran as Paul Boré. Helen Wright, brilliant, erratic, with an edge of contempt for herself and for the world in which she moves, is married but also very much in love with the young concert violinist Paul Boré, a few years her junior. Alone in her apartment, she is about to mix a drink as the broadcast of the Philharmonic Orchestra with Paul Boré as soloist begins.
First drink for myself, the second for my friends, the third for good humor, the fourth for my enemies. Oh, what's the use? Why am I sitting here drooling like an adolescent? I wish I'd never met him. Paul Boré, the young man with a genius for the violin, proud, sensitive, intense, a child of the city streets, its games, its customs. Son of poor parents, ambitious, eager for success. The wish to be respected, admired, and fighting the loneliness and isolation that great talent demands of a man. I first met him at a party I was giving in my home.
Like him, Helen?
He looks like a prize fighter. I am constitutionally given to enthusiasm about nothing. Hand me a drink, Victor, please.
Here you are.
Where did he get the clothes he's wearing? He looks like a rag picker. Who invited him here?
I'm only your husband. How would I know?
Stop being cynical. You, come over here.
You're talking to me?
Yes, you, the violin player. Come over here.
Well?
Victor, the boy genius, needs a drink.
Gin or scotch?
No, thanks.
Two scotches with a dash of heather. You play like a calliope.
I beg your pardon?
Now there's an original answer. He begs my pardon. Darling, are you by any chance the boy who got up and gave his seat to a lady in the subway? And now tell me, you're from the provinces?
I was born in New York.
Aha, here is that rare animal. A New Yorker from New York.
New York is full of all kinds of animals. Not all of them were born here.
Did you mean that as an insult, Mr.? You do have a name, don't you?
Sure, I'm in the telephone book. Under violins.
It's Boré. Paul Boré.
Bad manners, Mr. Boré. The infallible sign of talent. Shall I make a prediction? The world will soon divide itself into two camps, pro-Boré and anti-Boré.
Which camp would you be in, Mrs. Wright?
I'll see you to the door, Mr. Boré. While I was showing Mr. Boré out, I heard a guest ask my husband why I was riding him like that. He cynically replied, "He's getting interested." And he wasn't wrong. The following day, I sent a note to Paul. To a New Yorker from New York, with apologies for the rude behavior of a girl from the sticks who should know better. I included a gold cigarette case as a further token of peace. And that night we met in a shadowy and romantic bar.
To my head with a smile that makes my temperature rise.
I hope you forgive me, Paul.
I don't hold grudges. They waste time. But you didn't have to send the cigarette case.
I spend my life doing penance for things I should never have done in the first place. You don't like martinis?
Not particularly.
They're an acquired taste, like Tchaikovsky.
I've never had much time for acquired tastes, except Tchaikovsky.
You make it all sound a little grim. What do you do for amusement?
Play the violin.
Is that all you do? Play the violin?
Almost.
Go to concerts?
Not much. If they're good, I'm jealous. If they're bad, I'm bored.
No hobbies, no pleasures, no fun?
It's all there in the violin for me.
Girls?
A few.
That's all?
That's all.
You're strange.
No stranger than you.
Me? There's nothing very strange about me. I was married twice before. Once at 16 and once at 21. The first was a crybaby, and the other was a caveman. Between the two, I said goodbye to girlhood.
You're still young.
Take that glint out of your eye.
Glint?
The gleam in your eye. I don't know how you men get that way. Every time you meet an attractive woman, you begin to plan how and where you're going to club her wings down.
I'm different. I'm the fellow who's going to split the world into two camps, remember? I thought I was your favorite unknown talent.
You are, you are. You're a very talented violinist. And I like to help talent when I can. I'm interested in you as an artist.
Not as a person.
Only as an artist. You sound promising.
That's a crushing compliment.
Your playing is a little brash, a little over-brilliant. You need restraint.
You didn't like it?
The whole point to me about an artist is the sound he makes. The personal sound. It's his own sound, like no one else in the world. On a piano, a violin, any instrument. That's what's communicated between an audience and an artist. That's what you call personality. If he's got that, nothing else matters very much. If he doesn't, he might as well quit. You've got it.
In other words, you think I'm terrific.
I'll make up my own adjectives.
No, but seriously, am I ready for concerts?
I believe so.
That's all I wanted to know.
What are you going to play?
I'll talk to him down at school. They must know the ropes.
I'll save you the trouble. You need a hall. Tickets, posters, some ads, publicity. Let's say, $750 will do it. Do you happen to have $750 to spare?
I thought a manager takes care of all that.
For you, Paul Bourret? Darling, they've never heard of you.
Well, what about my playing? Doesn't that mean anything?
Oh, yes. You fill the lull between intermissions. Besides, what are you going to play on? You have a cheap instrument. You need a Stradivarius, a Guarnerius. Do you have a spare $25,000 to buy one?
I study 10 years, break my back, practice till my hands feel like wood. For what? Why didn't someone tell me this 10 years ago? You get a kick out of belittling me, don't you? Well, I don't like it.
You have all the characteristics of a successful virtuoso. You're self-indulgent, self-dedicated, and the hero of all your dreams.
You ought to try dreaming a little yourself. It might make you less cynical.
No, you're an artist, all right. All artists are a little offbeat. That's the Helen Wright neurotic theory of genius.
Okay. So we're both crazy. Where do we go from here?
I'm going to find you a manager, Frederick Bauer, and you shall have your concert. One month later, Paul made his debut. There, for the first time, I saw his mother. She was rather shy and resplendent in her unfamiliar formal gown. It was obvious she was a woman of great determination, with a great capacity for love of her son. And that was both wholehearted and unselfish. Seated beside her was a young girl, Gina, with love in her eyes for Paul. This was his school day sweetheart. And there was his father, very much a product of New York. The concert ended with a healthy round of applause, but nothing overwhelming. I joined Paul in his dressing room.
How did it go? What do you think?
Sounded very good to me. But then I didn't pay to get in.
I think I was better in the second half. I got warmed up. Felt good. Don't you think I was cold in the beginning? You know, I had no control in the first few minutes.
Oh, forget it, forget it. It was only perceptible to the whole audience. No, on the level, Paul. It was really first rate. You left them in a quiet frenzy.
I don't know. I'd give anything to do the whole concert over again.
Listen, no matter how many concerts you play, you'll always have the penalty of not satisfying yourself. Preserve that feeling of dissatisfaction, and you'll be fine.
I'd like to go somewhere and hide.
Oh, you're behaving like a schoolboy. The concert was a complete success. Now, let's talk about something else. What about ancient Greece? What's your opinion of Greek civilization?
I have no opinion. All I know is how I feel, and that's low. What a debut. Rows and rows of empty seats staring at me, and then I fluffed that passage in the Brahms.
Don't worry. You won't hear from Brahms in the morning.
Please, forget the gags.
Save your anger for the party and your honor at my apartment. Everyone's waiting for you.
Thanks, but I can't go. My family's giving a little party and...
You're going to disappoint all those people?
Come in.
Paul, Paul.
Oh, Mom.
You were wonderful. Oh. Papa, say something. Say something to Paul.
Oh, you played so beautiful, Paul, I cried. And I wasn't ashamed.
Gina.
Oh, Paul, I'm proud of you. I'm so proud of you.
Thanks, Gina.
See you later, Paul. I don't want to intrude on the family reunion.
Oh, wait a minute.
Let her go, Paul.
Oh, but that's Mrs. Wright.
I know. She's very beautiful, isn't she?
Yes.
She's a married woman.
So what?
Maybe it's none of my business, Paul. But I have eyes. I can see what's going to happen.
Nothing's going to happen.
You're a clean boy, starting a clean career. You shouldn't get involved.
Let me live my own life. I know what I want.
Don't let your life get twisted. You pay for what you get in life. Special people have special pains to pay for.
Line me up and I play. I'm not a machine. I've got feelings, too.
You hold in your hands a career made only in storybooks. Respected, rewarded.
Good night. I'm leaving.
Wait, Paul. Where are you going?
Where do you think?
Oh, be careful. The stakes are big. This isn't a 2-hour trip to Chinatown. Think of the future. Think what will be next year and the year after. Think of your work.
Here's a word from RCA Victor. Inch for inch, your best buy in television is RCA Victor 19-inch. It's big, better, more for your money, and here's why. RCA Victor's new picture pickup brings in the best possible reception. Pictures are clear, steady, and bright. And RCA Victor television is million-proof television. Quality proven in over 2 million homes. Best of all, RCA Victor 19-inch television is yours for little more than what was once paid for 10-inch television. And remember this. Only RCA Victor owners can buy the RCA Victor factory service contract for expert installation and maintenance. So ask your RCA Victor dealer to show you 19-inch television. It's available in a wide range of table models, console, and combination instruments. And by the way, here's a big RCA Victor record value. It's the new Singers Single Series. 54 all-time Tin Pan Alley tunes by 9 of America's brightest recording stars. Now, the second act of Humoresque, starring Tallulah Bankhead and Steve Cochran.
The debut of a violinist of uncommon power and integrity is the news this morning. It is difficult to remember a first concert equal to it for virtuosity, musicianship, and the highest type of interpretation. Paul Bourré is a young violinist of great gifts, and there are even reviews of a more complimentary. Strange the feeling one gets from accomplishment, from a job well done. Paul was my accomplishment. I had given him the opportunity to make good. In my anxiety to further his career, I invited Anton Hagerstrom, the eminent symphony conductor, to listen to him play.
Thank you, Mr. Bourré.
What did you think, Anton?
Good. That's excellent in many ways.
Then you forgive me.
Forgiving you, Helen, is an old and not unpleasant habit.
Well, I knew you wouldn't come if I told you you'd have to listen to a recital. I think symphony conductors develop selective ears. They can be very deaf on occasions.
Where do you study, Mr. Bourré?
The National Institute.
Ah, with Hose now?
Yes.
Where can I reach you?
Through Bauer.
Bauer, you're in good hands. Come by my office. I'd like to talk to you.
Thank you.
Good day, Helen.
It was very sweet of you to come, Anton.
I'll see you soon, Mr. Bourré. Goodbye.
Didn't he know I was going to play?
Never look a gift conductor in the baton. I took it for granted you'd want to play for him.
Of course I wanted to. I respect Hagerstrom. I respect his opinion. But that's not the point.
What is the point?
You tricked him. Tricked a famous conductor into listening to a young, unknown artist. Is that it?
It was for your sake I asked Hagerstrom up. I don't play the violin.
The patroness of the arts. What am I? A substitute for this year's trip to Sun Valley? The discovery of a new painter? Or redecorating your house? You think it's pleasant to stand here and let a woman patronize you?
You have an excess of pride.
My father kept a grocery store. He still has it.
My father had a bank. He still has it, too. Doesn't it ever occur to you to be grateful for anything?
Yes. I'm grateful for the concert. And for Bauer. I'm grateful for the chance to play for Hagerstrom. That's about the list so far, isn't it? I'm in your debt.
I don't recall mentioning it.
You don't have to. It's all assumed. I'm supposed to be humble, grateful, stay in my place, the thankful protege. You didn't do anything for me, really. You did it for yourself. The way you'd buy a racehorse or build a yacht or collect paintings. You added a violin player to your possessions, that's all.
You're a mass of prejudices, aren't you? You're so much thought and so little feeling. Well, I'm in no mood to argue the point. I'll settle for a drink.
You've been drinking all afternoon. Why do you have to drink so much?
Ask me no questions. You remember that? It's an old childhood saying. Ask me no questions, I'll tell you no lies. What sayings were current in your childhood?
Beware of Greeks bearing gifts.
Oh, hello, you two.
Hello, Mr. Wright.
You're just in time, Victor. Paul was upbraiding me for my bad manners.
Oh, was he?
It seems I don't know the etiquette of gratitude. Bourbon for you, Victor.
Oh, please. Won't you have something, Paul?
Yeah, no, thanks. They say people only drink when they're frustrated.
Or thirsty.
Or unhappy. Did you like Hagerstrom, Paul?
Your wife was kind enough to introduce me.
Soda and yours, Victor?
Oh, please.
You should really have heard Paul, Victor. He has some very original ideas. He has been expanding on my general uselessness. He thinks I live a wasted life. Somehow, the first time you kiss a man, the mental image is always firmly imprinted in memory. With Paul, it began outside my beach house. In silence, we stared at each other, his eyes almost coldly angry. But beyond that, now that we were standing closely together, was the almost overwhelming undercurrent attraction we had felt for each other and fought from the very first. I tried running away from him.
Why are you running away, Helen? What are you afraid of?
I'm just careful.
Of what?
The world in general.
That's pretty vague.
It's a woman's privilege to be vague.
You want people to think you're brittle and shallow. The woman with the wisecracks, the gay gag. You're not really.
My friends would be delighted to hear it.
You're lonely. Do you think you can fool me? We're too alike. I know you too well.
You don't know me at all.
Why did you ask me out here today?
I thought you might enjoy it. I was coming anyway.
That's not true.
I don't like insolence, even from my guests.
Helen.
Don't touch me. Leave me alone.
I love you.
Don't touch me. Then deliberately, without haste, we kissed. And the kiss which we began in anger and struggle found us stripped of tension and defense. Then the earth and the heavens seemed to swallow us up, and time too fleetingly passed. You might be sorry love was ever invented. I'm not a simple person, Paul. I have my faults.
Who hasn't? I've got a quota of them tucked away in my back pocket.
I don't like mine hidden. I wear them like medals.
I'll take my chances.
I've been a law to myself ever since I can remember. People were stupid enough to put up with it. You never did.
And you like that?
I hated it. I was afraid of it. I still am.
Why?
It takes a great deal of courage to look at ourselves as we really are. I never wanted to. So I drink. That's the truth, pure and simple.
The truth is never simple.
I'm tired of running. I'm tired of hiding. I've spent my life escaping from reality. I can't fight you, Paul. But remember, I warned you. Soon after, Paul began his triumphant concert tour. One night, while he was gone, I had a dream. Paul was playing his violin with great intensity. He was trying to forget me, but my image returned insistently, growing larger and larger, until climatically my face covered the whole auditorium, symbolizing his inability to forget me. And then as the rhythm of the concerto mounted to a final crescendo, abruptly at its highest pitch, there was the peculiar harsh zinging sound of a string breaking. The music stopped, and my image disappeared. Paul, white with emotion, shaken, stared at the broken string. That dream has never left my memory. And when Paul returned and didn't call me, I sought him out. I found him at a little Italian restaurant with Gina.
Why is your father always late, Paul?
Well, you know, Papa. He has no sense of time.
It's a modern invention. Papa has no use for modern inventions. Maybe he's right. No one seems to have time anymore.
Well, I've been up to my ears, Gina, the tour and recordings. You know how it is.
No, I don't.
Ah, come on. You're not really angry at me, are you? You're a blank check in my emotions. Any amount you want to write in. Don't you believe that?
No, you've changed. But then I guess we ought to be able to forget old friends, pack them away in some dim corner like last year's souvenirs, blot them out of time and mind. That would be the kindest way.
What do you expect me to say? Roses are red, violets are blue, and so am I.
I'm blue.
Hello, Paul.
Helen.
I'm sorry I can't stay very long. I just wanted to add my congratulations to the general acclaim. Good day.
Wait a minute. Excuse me, Gina. Why don't you be reasonable, Helen?
I will. I'm going to have a drink.
That isn't necessary.
Mind your own business.
You'll nip yourself to death someday.
Bartender, double scotch.
Okay. Sure, why not?
Do I bore you?
Somewhat.
Very pretty girl, Gina.
Yes, we grew up together.
You might have found time to call me. Philadelphia isn't the end of the world.
I didn't want to.
Thanks. That was nice of you.
I wanted time to think.
How convenient. Men are like that. They want all the conveniences and none of the difficulties. What did you think about the life and times of Peter Ilyich Tchaikovsky? How did you...
I thought about us.
Oh, you expect me to believe...
I don't care whether you believe it or not.
I'd like to slap your face.
Why don't you try it?
Oh, what's the use? Come on, let's get out of here. I'm tired of quarrels.
It's not my doing. I didn't want it.
Did you think you could go off for months, never call, never write, and come back to find me hanging in your clothes closet, like a suit you might put on someday a year from now? Oh, Paul, Paul. What's a woman good for if she's no use to anyone?
I owe you a great deal.
Give it to charity. I'm one of those women that simply must have some man to devote her life to. Let me help you in the small, foolish ways I can. I'll live without the grand opera love is supposed to be. But don't close me out of your life. You've got talent. You have something solid to hang on to, no matter what happens in your personal life. Oh, I envy you.
You're married, Helen.
We're both old enough to vote.
Makes me laugh how much we're alike. This sparring around like two wrestlers looking for a hold.
At times, a sense of humor is welcome. We don't laugh enough. That's our trouble. It's your fault. I think you were born angry. I don't like angry people. You know that?
Evidently, you don't think so much of me.
I love you, so I don't care what I think of you. Just let me be myself, Paul. Put me in your pocket. Take me in your life. That's all I ask.
Helen, you've got me half crazy. I don't understand you at all.
I'm an experience you should have.
Let's drop in on Bing and Bob, discussing a topic all smokers like to know about.
Bob, do you realize we only have one thing in common?
Hardly enough for a happy marriage, is it? What's that, Bing?
Chesterfields, of course. We both like them, we both sell them.
And we'd better get to selling them now. You know, folks, better tasting Chesterfield is the only cigarette that combines for you mildness with no unpleasant aftertaste.
How do you know they're mild? Well, you just make our mildness test. You buy them, open them up, and enjoy that milder aroma. And smoke a Chesterfield. You'll know it's milder because it smokes milder.
And Chesterfield leaves no unpleasant aftertaste. That fact has been confirmed by the country's first and only cigarette taste panel. So, always buy Chesterfield.
Let's sum it up musically.
Buy Chesterfield, Chesterfield, the one that proves its case. Yes, Chesterfields are milder, milder, plus no aftertaste.
Oh ho, open a pack and give them a sniff.
Then you'll smoke them.
You are listening to the Screen Directors Playhouse, one of the weekly features on NBC's All-Star Festival, brought to you by the makers of Anacin for fast relief from the pain of headache, neuritis, and neuralgia, by RCA Victor, world leader in radio, first in recorded music, first in television, and by Chesterfield, the only cigarette that gives you mildness, plus no unpleasant aftertaste, the best cigarette for you to smoke. The Screen Directors Playhouse production of Humoresque, starring Tallulah Bankhead and Steve Cochran, will continue in just a moment after a brief pause for station identification. This is the Screen Director's Playhouse. We continue with the third act of Humoresque, starring Tallulah Bankhead and Steve Cochran.
Boré, 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 no longer Paul Boré. Famous enough to be distinguished by a last name. Ifritz, Caruso, Garbo, Gable, Boré. A concert at the Philharmonic, swept by the storm of melody and the vision of Paul. Gina breaking under the drive of the music and her own tension. In love and knowing she had lost Paul. And Mrs. Boré, aware of the danger to her son and the tightening network of the Helen Wright relationship. And Paul on stage, living, needing, and almost hating the urgent sweep of the music. And myself, smugly the victor. Then the burst of deafening applause and the concert was over. Paul was with his family in his dressing room.
Oh, it was amazing. Wonderful, wonderful. Oh,
they liked you, Paul. They liked you. The applause.
May I come in?
Of course. Mom, I want you to meet Mrs. Wright.
How do you do, Miss Wright?
How do you do?
My father.
How do you do?
Nice to meet you. Paul's told us all about you.
He speaks of you very often.
Remember the cigarette case, Mama? Mrs. Wright sent it, remember?
I've always wanted to meet you and your husband.
I'm sorry, he couldn't come tonight.
Pop, will you do me a favor? Huh? Get a cab for you and Mom. There's a stand just outside.
Sure, Paul.
You're not coming with us, Paul?
No, I have to see Bauer.
Bauer?
See you later, Mom.
Yes, yes.
Goodbye, Mrs. Boré.
Goodbye, Mrs. Wright.
You knew I'd see you later. Why did you come to the dressing room?
Why not? Haven't I any right to share the family joys? Or perhaps I'm not supposed to be part of the family.
Don't be coy. It doesn't look well on you.
I'm not trying to be coy.
There's another word for it. Come on.
I like your mother.
Don't make me laugh.
All right, I'm sorry. A woman has a right to be difficult from time to time. Some of the greatest women in history, they say, have been difficult. Starting with Cleopatra. It's the trademark of the species. I said I'm sorry.
Don't apologize. Let's walk up the street.
Thanks for inviting me. Paul, do you think I want things to happen this way? I don't know why they happen. I never pretended. I never said I was placid. I'm a demanding woman, a jealous woman, a possessive woman. I never had to share anything with anyone. Look in the store window, those wax dummies. They're beautiful and calm. They'll never offend your pride or hurt your ego. They're so easy to handle. But they're dummies.
Let's keep walking.
No, listen to me. What can they give you? Convenience? Convenience is a slow poison. You'll have to learn that along with your music and the other articles of a full life. I've been married twice before. Not bad men, but they wanted dummies. They thought a woman was a glorified confection, a box of candy, to which you help yourself when you're in the mood.
Helen.
No, I'm not finished yet. I'm not a dummy. I'm apt to be very troublesome sometimes. The woman who isn't worth her salt. You came into my life in a year of chaos. I was sick, disgusted, beaten by a whole mess of circumstances. You took me out of that mess and gave me shape, purpose. You gave my whole life a focus. Something to work for and believe in.
Outside of my music, I guess I'm a pretty ordinary package. Helen, I love you more than anything in this world.
Part of success is where you live and how you live. Paul moved to new quarters, nothing less than a penthouse. He furnished it with the best that money could buy, and he attempted to show me how much he loved me by displaying my photographs in every corner of the apartment. Then his family visited him.
Mama.
Mom, look at that. See the river? I get the sea breeze up here.
An eagle's nest.
Well, what do you think, Mom?
It's nice. Where did you get the drapes?
Mrs. Wright picked them out. You approve?
They're nice drapes.
A mile high. The people look like ants in the street.
Is this silver on the sideboard?
No, it's pewter.
Where did you buy them?
Oh, that woman. Come on. I'll show you the bedroom. You don't like this arrangement, do you?
Frankly?
Come on now. We went all through that, Mom. You know why I wanted my own place. I need a place where I can work, think, practice.
What was the matter with your room at home? Couldn't you practice there?
I'm not a kid anymore, Mom.
No.
Mom, what do you think you'll find in that drawer?
What I found everywhere else in this apartment. Mrs. Wright's picture.
Oh, Mom, I can't take this seriously.
Someone has to. You don't know what you're doing.
Don't be old-fashioned.
There's no shame in that. I know what I believe in. It's your life. Remember, I told you.
All right. I'm in love with her. Is that what you want me to say?
With a married woman? Do you know what she is? Married, divorced, married again, divorced again and again. Well, there's something wrong with people like that. They have no roots. They have nothing. They're empty.
You don't know what you're saying.
Don't I? You don't have a corner on wisdom, Paul. I haven't lived for nothing. I'm not a fool. I tell you, they're hollow people, floating, aimless. Maybe it isn't her fault, but what can another marriage mean to her? Husband number four.
You never gave her a chance. You never liked her. You didn't even try to understand her. You have no right to talk about her that way.
Do I have to wait for your permission to speak?
Don't try to tell me what to do.
You!
Ma.
Goodbye, Paul.
You're doing fine, Victor. You're hitting the board with a dart.
Ellen, is it really possible to hit the bullseye with a dart?
With practice, Victor.
Mm-hmm. Like everything else, I suppose.
Like most things.
Missed. Had a curious conversation the other day. A friend of mine wanted some advice. He's having trouble with his wife. I better get the darts back. Bad aim. There's a young man involved, and he, my friend, doesn't know quite what to do. There, I've gathered my ammunition. I can return to the line.
Yes?
Of course, my friend, he hasn't the right to do anything.
No? Why?
Well, he's only an excuse for a man, really. He's never done very much, never wanted to. The fates and a few energetic ancestors have allowed him to lead a rather soft and easy life. On the whole, he prefers it that way. Naturally, his wife, quite a personality in her own right, never liked that. Always a bit contemptuous of him. The peculiar thing is that he loves his wife very much. In his own way, of course. But he's never been able to prove it to her. Not man enough, I suppose. Not enough character, as the good book says. Still, he's learned to make less mess in public than any man living. That's only a negative virtue, and it doesn't really fool a wife very long. How do you know? I hit the bullseye. So, all things considered, he's thinking about giving his wife a divorce. Do you think that's a reasonable solution?
Victor, stop it.
Why don't you stop it?
There's nothing to stop.
Rumor has it otherwise.
Only rumor. No backstairs gossip. No anonymous letters.
I'm sorry, Helen. Rumor is a dubious and nasty authority. What can this boy give you? Suppose you do marry him. How long would it last? How long before you'd get tired of him? Or he of you? You know yourself better than anyone else, Helen. Can you change now? And even if you don't, you really believe he'll change? He doesn't know what it means to be soft. Nothing means anything to him but his music.
I never said I wanted to marry him.
Do you love him?
You say you love me, Victor. What kind of a love has it been? You've always been courteous to me, always remembered my birthday. Is that the final sum and substance of our marriage? Courtesy and birthday greetings? I know what I am. I know what I've become. I never had the chance to love. You don't like emotions. They're wearing. They make demands. They interfere with the pleasant life. I learned to hide away love and hate, everything strong in me. I tucked them away where they wouldn't bother us. We hung a sign on our lives. Do not disturb.
You can have the divorce, Helen.
I went to the broadcasting studio where Paul was rehearsing to break the good news to him. As the music reverberated in the empty theater, I sent him a note to meet me as soon as possible at the club. He read it very casually and threw it aside and asked the conductor to begin all over again. Doubt began to assail me. and I could hear Victor's voice roaring through my head.
He's iron, Helen, young, hard. He never lived in an easy world. He doesn't know what it means to be soft. Nothing means anything to him but his music.
I left and went to the club, and Paul, absorbed in his music, was unaware that I'd ever been there.
You go to my head, and you linger like a haunting refrain.
Does she have to sing that? Tell her to stop it, Eddie.
Cut it, sweetheart.
No offense, I hope, Eddie.
No offense. You've been quiet all night.
Have I? Mm. Well, what do you know about that? The little girl has lost her tongue. Give me another one, the same.
Okay, coming up.
Shall I get verbal, Eddie? French? Il pleut doucement sous la vie. Pardon my French accent. Wait, Eddie. I'll do it for you again. Il pleut, il pleut, il pleut. Oh, I'm really good at English. Listen. Oh, western wind, when wilt thou blow that the small rain can down rain? What's a small rain, Eddie? Does a small rain grow up into a big rain if it's a good little rain and never does anything bad?
Does brandy always make you poetic, Mrs. Wright?
No offense, pal.
Helen.
Paul, what do you know? The place is haunted. How about a drink for the gentleman, Eddie? What are you looking at, Paul? Don't you want a drink? Eddie, the gentleman has changed his mind. Skål!
You've had enough.
I'm thirsty. Nothing for you, you're sure?
Nothing. I'm going to take you home.
Ah, the gallant night. Soft music, please. Quiet. My friend is being considerate. He wants to take me home. The way you took me to dinner?
I came as soon as I could.
It wasn't soon enough.
I'm tired, Helen. It's been a long day.
Only the usual deadly length.
I'd like to get home, get some rest.
Go ahead.
You're coming with me.
Leave me alone. Go back to your music. I'm tired of playing second fiddle to the ghost of Beethoven. Skål!
Put it down.
Mind your business. No offense, pal, but mind your business.
I said put it down.
Now hold it, Bud. I don't think the lady wants you to interfere.
Keep your hands off him, Eddie. Leave him alone.
Well, I'm sorry. No offense.
That's my line. No offense. No offense, anybody.
Well, come on now. Put your coat on.
Let me alone. Paul, I'm a lost crusade.
Turn around.
You're a hangman's noose to me. Leave me alone, please.
Now say good night.
Good night, Eddie.
Night, Mrs. Wright. Good night.
Come on, you need some air. Let's go out on the terrace.
Know something, Paul? Autumn's a sad time of year.
When I was a kid, it meant the holiday was over. Back to school.
It's a pretty sight from up here. A painted city. It's not so pretty close up. Nothing ever is. The Beauré part of it, the top of the world. You think they're all asleep? At least a million must have the midnight miseries. Wondering where she is or where he is. What are you thinking, Paul?
What happened tonight?
I spoke to Victor. You give me the divorce. Did you hear?
Yes, I heard.
He was very kind about it.
Was he? What else did he say?
Nothing.
What else did he say, Helen?
I tell you, that's all he said.
Then why the tears? Why the miseries?
Why not? I'm losing a husband.
You're hiding something. I know you too well, Helen. What happened?
Isn't that enough?
Why did you go out and get drunk?
I like to drink. It's an escape. Isn't that what you once told me?
I once told you that I loved you. Why not remember that? Helen.
No, don't. Don't hold out hope. Beware of pity.
I love you. Or maybe that's an inarticulate way of saying I love you.
Not me. It's someone you made up. It's the wax lady in the window. The woman with all the impossible virtues. Not me.
I want to marry you.
Marry? That's an easy word to say it. It rolls so trippingly off the tongue. The bride wore white. Oh, no, no, no. White's only for the first marriage, isn't it? White for the first, red for the second, black.
Stop it.
Herd. What are you afraid of? Are you afraid of the truth? You don't want me, Paul. Not really. I'm too wearing on the nerve. You need the homemaker type. Boiling baby's bottles, putting up preserves. Outside of your music, you cherish all the standard virtues. Home and mother, babies and dogs, the white collar forever. Why hold up the wall? Let it fall.
You don't know what you're talking about.
I won't change.
I'm not asking you to anymore.
It won't work. I tell you, it won't work.
But how do we know?
I have the blood of the prophets in me. Do we need an oracle?
Please, darling.
Why don't you say it? Can't you speak out clear with courage? Can't you say you don't love me, that you never want to see me again?
I want to marry you. How many times do I have to say it?
You're married already. Married to your music. Married to your work. You'll never marry me. Don't forget your music. I hate music. I detest it.
Stop it, Helen. Don't fight. Don't try to fight anymore.
I won't. I love you. The last passages have been paid. Tomorrow the papers will again proclaim another triumph of Beret. I should be very proud of myself. Helen Wright, dilettante extraordinary. Patroness of the arts. Savior of struggling genius. Oh, yes, I'm proud of myself. Proud of the only talent I ever possessed. Destruction. Destroying everything I've ever built. Everyone I've ever known. Oh, Paul, Paul. If only you were here now beside me, I would say, shut out the world. Just let me belong to you, be with you, live for you. Can I do this to you? Can I marry you and destroy you too? Yes, come in.
May I talk to you, Mrs. Wright?
Oh, you're Gina, aren't you?
Yes.
I know all about you. Paul told me. Were you to the concert?
Yes, I spoke to Paul afterwards. Mrs. Wright, I know Paul is very much in love with you, and I just wanted to say that...
Please, sit down.
Oh, thank you. Mrs. Wright, Paul has always meant a good deal to me, and I want him to be happy, and if you can do that for him, you're the one he should be with. Maybe what I'm trying to say is unnecessary. I mean, what I think. But I wanted you to know that I wish you both happiness.
Thanks, Gina.
Well, there's nothing more to say. I guess I'll be going.
No, no, please stay. I've never really talked about Paul with anyone who's known him for a long time.
We were kids together. He used to tease me all the time.
I bet you loved that.
Yes. Deep inside of me, I guess I was his slave from the very first moment.
What was he like then?
Oh, like most kids. A little more intense, keyed higher, wanting more. Full of big hopes, wild dreams.
You know, Gina, he hurts me. He doesn't mean to. But he hurts me.
I don't understand.
Did you ever have a dream so intense that the real thing was worthless when you got it? Paul must have had a dream like that as a boy. About success. About love. About a woman.
That's not an unusual dream, Mrs. Wright. Especially for poor boys.
With this exception, most of them give up the dream for the real thing. They compromise with reality. Not Paul. My point is, Gina, I'm not a dream girl.
But Paul thinks you are. That's all any woman should need.
Thanks again, Gina. I'm grateful for that. Would you care for a drink?
Oh, no, thank you.
Well, I seem to need one right now. You know why I stuck to Paul at first? I thought he'd need my money.
He didn't.
He needs what money can't buy. And I'm not sure I can give him what he needs.
You love him, don't you?
I love him. If he wanted me to die for him... I'm being rather sloppy, aren't I?
Love is that way at times. But it can be very clean if you work at it and
and cherish it.
Yes, cherish it. Well, let me propose a toast to love. Did I say love? I mean love. And another toast. To the time when we were little girls. And no one asked us to marry. Keep your chin up, Gina. Mrs. Borey?
Mrs. Wright.
Mama, it's Mrs. Wright.
I hope you don't mind my coming. I know I should have phoned first.
Mind? Oh, come in. Look around. Make yourself at home. I'll bet you never saw a grocery store before. The slicing machine is brand new, not a week old. You put a loaf in, push the button, zip, zip. White sliced bread.
I don't think Mrs. Wright came to see the fixtures.
Eh?
Will you come to the back, please?
Thank you.
You stay here, Papa.
All right, Mama. All right.
We live here in back of the store. Well?
Mrs. Borey,
I know. Paul wants to marry you.
What did you say?
No.
Why? You don't approve of me?
You're everything a mother might want in her son's wife. Beautiful. A woman in love.
You believe that, at least.
Makes no difference. Why did you come here? You didn't have to. You won, Mrs. Wright. Paul won't listen to me.
Maybe that's why I came. Winning and losing are curious things. They're apt to get mixed up. It depends on what you're trying to win. I have one virtue, Mrs. Borey. I never lied to myself. I lived a meaningless and absurd life among silly and rather futile people. I tried to run away from it. The easiest way, drinking. It didn't work. It's a little difficult to break the habits of a lifetime. I don't know anymore whether I can stop running away from myself, from reality. Escape is a potent drug. It can be very pleasant.
Is that what you see in Paul? Another chance to run away, another chance to hide?
No, no. Paul never meant that to me.
You talk of love. I don't know what it means to you. It's a love that demands everything and gives nothing in return.
No, no, no.
He says he wants to marry you. Maybe you think it might work. But suppose it doesn't. Suppose you fail. You failed before. What happens then? What happens to Paul?
Paul?
Yes.
That picture on the mantel. How old was he then?
11.
I believe in fairy tales at 11. And in fairy godmothers. And that I could be anything in the world I wanted.
You can. If you want it. What about Paul, Mrs. Wright? What about Paul?
Helen, what are you doing here? I've been looking all over for you. Helen, you know you're driving me crazy.
We've finished, Paul.
And look, this constant sparring has got to stop. Where? What?
As the man said, we made beautiful music together. But the concert is over as far as you and I are concerned.
You don't know what you're saying. Helen, Helen, listen, we'll go away together. Forget everything but each other.
Sure, run out. Run away. Pack your bag. Take the first train out of Grand Central Station. Run off somewhere where they don't know you, never heard of you. Bury your violin in the deepest hole you can find. Forget concerts. Oh, Paul, Paul. It still won't do you any good.
It can work, Helen. I know it. I don't care if I ever hear another note of music again.
Right now, maybe you think you hate music. You don't. You couldn't. Music is a compulsion, an obsession with you. You'll blow up into 1,000 pieces if you don't play. Who are you kidding? It's twisted into your bones as part of you. Run as far as you like. You'll come crawling back to it. It's what you are.
No, no.
What did you think a concert career would be like? Something you could put together with toothpicks and mucilage? Little ink spots and finger exercises? Put a nigger in the slot and out pops a concert? You wanted a career? Well, you have it. Balzac once said, genius is a disease. It grows and it grows and it grows until it absorbs everything. Do you think you can run away from that? Goodbye, Paul. Goodbye, Mrs. Bory. You see, I don't believe in fairy tales anymore.
So ends the adaptation of Humoresque, starring Tallulah Bankhead and Steve Cochran. Our stars will return in just a moment. Next week, the Screen Directors Playhouse is pleased to present the screen comedy Jackpot. And our stars will be Miss Margaret Truman and Mr. James Stewart. Now, here are tonight's stars, Tallulah Bankhead and Steve Cochran.
Frequently I've been asked, what makes a star great? Important enough to win an Academy Award. What would be your guess, Steve?
A combination of a good script, an outstanding part, and a great director.
Very correct analysis. A few years ago, I saw a picture that starred Jane Wyman, Johnny Valenda, for which she won the Academy Award. And I'm willing to wager that Jane might feel as I do. If she were asked what was the major contribution to her performance, she would answer, Jean Negulesco. Darlings, may I present Mr. Negulesco, the director of Johnny Valenda, Humoresque, Three Came Home, and Mudlark.
Thanks to Lula and Steve. We of the Screen Directors Guild take great pride in our radio show, and we always strive to present the best. As proof of that, Tallulah, you've been in our show 3 times this season.
Oh, thank you, Jan.
And Steve, I saw Storm Warning. You are just tremendous. I look forward to seeing both you and Tallulah back again in our show real soon. Good night.
Good night, John.
Good night, darlings. And may the good Lord bless and keep you until we meet again.
Humoresque was presented through the courtesy of Warner Brothers, producing I Was a Communist for the FBI, starring Frank Lovejoy. Steve Cochran will soon be seen in the Warner Brothers production Inside the Walls of Folsom Prison. Portions of tonight's recorded musical score were played from the original score by Isaac Stern, the famous violinist. Included in tonight's cast were Ben Wright, John Stevenson, Helen Mar Ventile, Lynn Allen, Lester Paiva, and Sheldon Leonard. Humoresque was adapted for radio by Jack Rubin. Screen Directors Playhouse is produced by Howard Wiley, and the dramatic director was Warren Lewis. Portions of tonight's program were transcribed. This is Jimmy Wallington speaking, and inviting you to listen next week when Screen Directors Playhouse presents Jackpot, starring Miss Margaret Truman and Mr. James Stewart, with screen director Walter Lang. When you give to the Red Cross, you help yourself. Won't you sit down now and mail your check to your local Red Cross chapter? Listen again next week to Screen Directors Playhouse, one of the weekly features on NBC's All-Star Festival of Comedy, Music, Mystery, and Drama. Listen tomorrow evening to the one and only Duffy's Tavern, the Friday night feature of the All-Star Festival.
Here's Sam Spade and Nero Wolfe for Mystery tomorrow on NBC.